Richard?
Okay, we'll call a meeting to order, 46th meeting of House CNRA. Today's Monday, the 16th of March, time is 1:37 PM. A note for the record, there is a quorum present, Representative Gonzalez, Representative Sherry Davis, Representative Mackey, Representative Gail Phillips, Representative Richard Foster. It's my understanding that Representative Baker's out of town, and Representative Betty Davis is ill today. On the agenda today is House Bill 384 relating to administrative costs of contractors under the daycare assistance program. House Bill 526 relating to certain public construction contractors and certain procurements. Also, you have a file of proposed bills for committee discussion. Moratorium on charter vessel licenses, also establishing the Alaska Community College system. So with that, we will take the first item, House Bill 384. Representative Sherry Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate your hearing this bill today. I probably have the worst timing in the entire world. Perhaps if I'd done this bill last year or the year before, it wouldn't have been quite so looked at so askance, I suppose, is the word, because I'm looking at the fiscal note when I say that, and anything with a fiscal note, large fiscal note on it, is certainly not popular in this time. My concern, and the reason that I'm bringing this bill before you, is that there has already in various communities been discussion about the cost to the community of it, over and above the authorized cost for administration in these daycare assistance programs. Communities are not required to do these programs. These programs are on a voluntary basis. As we get into the fiscal crisis that we're in, and as we start reducing funds that go out to communities in various ways, I think this will become a more pertinent issue than it even is right now, and that is that if the community doesn't feel that there's adequate administrative support within the grant for daycare assistance, they may well decide that's something they can do without. I want to keep daycare assistance programs going in the state. I think they're a very important piece of our economic picture, and without them, many people cannot be in the workforce. Particularly single parents, and I would ask you to consider this bill in the light of the fact that it does indeed either increase the amount of funding to daycare assistance or reduce the amount of grant money available to the individual clients, but it may well be the piece that keeps communities offering daycare assistance programs through their communities will be enable them to continue to operate these programs. Otherwise, they may have to reduce them or eliminate them themselves, and that will have the same effect, which is throwing people off the program. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions from committee?
Just one question.
Representative Gonzalez.
And this is a 5% increase?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Representative Gonzalez, it would authorize them to use up to 15% of the grant for assistance rather than the 10% that's now authorized.
But it doesn't increase the amount of the grant?
No.
Okay.
But the fiscal note is as I can see it, the fiscal note is premised on the idea that you'd have to increase the amount of money going into this in order to do this, because otherwise you would decrease the amount of grants available, and I understand that.
Is that what the legislation does, or is that an assumption?
Personally, I think that's an assumption.
Representative
Gonzalez. On the condition of the fiscal note act announced, that's why I asked that question. It says, by increasing the allowable administrative rate from 10 to 50%, the bill increases the cost of the program by 5%. That's the reason I asked that question.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I might, Representative Gonzalez, that's true. It just depends on the way you look at it. You can do it one way. You can add money to the program to that line item, or in the other manner, if you don't add money to the line item but you pass this bill, it decreases the grant available, grant line available.
Okay. Representative Foster.
Were you ready to move this bill? Or?
No, we have several people to testify on the bill. I'd like to hear from everybody first. I guess just in a follow-up on Representative Gonzalez's question, this bill doesn't mandate an increase in the program. It just changes the structure in which monies can be used for administrative expenses, and whether or not the program's increased is another matter that would come before us.
That's correct.
Okay, any other questions to the sponsor?
Mr. Chairman, I probably should have noted, and I might also note that it does one other thing that we hadn't really anticipated or thought about very much when we put the bill together, but the bill also, just because of the way the language is worded, changes the way the funding is given out to those entities that do run these programs, and that's been one of the major pieces of support for this, is people now have to wait to find out how much they're going to get for their administrative costs where they know up front.
Okay. Cindy Harrington. Hi. Can you state your name and occupation for the record and speak loudly that the mic will pick it up?
Cindy Harrington, Program Director of Child Care Resources here in Juneau. One of the programs that I administer is the Daycare Assistance Program, one of three child care programs. I agree with Representative Davis that timing is probably a little strange, but let me try and answer to some of your concerns about the fiscal note and about the way the funding is. First of all, I speak for, since this is not teleconference, I speak for the Local Administrators Association in supporting the bill as is. If the daycare assistance program is cut, then it's going to require more careful administration than we, it's going to require even more careful administration to spread those dollars among the people that it will be available to. It's not going to decrease the need that we have to have our administration costs met. Right now they are higher than 10%, and they're being subsidized in a variety of ways, but none by the intent of the program. We don't receive any additional monies or in-kind contributions from the municipality. We're a nonprofit agency, and right now we're administering the program ourselves. I don't know how to address the fiscal note issue, except to say that the program is very complex. There's a set of PNPs on it that's like this. If we have less money to deal with, we're going to be more carefully scrutinizing the people that to see who is eligible for the program and try and make the dollars spread. The other thing I'd like to address as far as how we're going to be dipping into the subsidy amount. As you know, there's been some federal child care dollars that have become available this year as well, and they've kind of been thrown in the pot with the state dollars. So I'm referring to the welfare reform dollars, the FSA monies, and the at-risk monies. First of all, those are 15% admin. Let me say that up front. We do receive 15% for the federal programs. As part of the federal programs, there's a 3% self-pay mechanism, and that means that we no longer subsidize parents at 100%, but rather 97% is the maximum. So for this fiscal year, for the first time, we've realized, it's not exactly program income, but we've realized 3% that the parents are paying that's kind of come back into the pot. And so maybe we could consider that as an offset against the potential increase into the subsidy dollars. Frankly, we can't continue to administer the program at the level that it's at right now, even given the situation.
Okay. Questions for Representative Davis?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you might, Cindy, if you cannot any longer administer the program, is there someone else who will pick it up?
The municipalities right now, we're subcontracted with the municipality, and they are... I don't want to say anxious, but they're agreeable to. They would like to turn it over to us next year directly. Right now, they take a small percentage of our admin themselves for pass-through monies. They haven't indicated any great desire to hold on to the program, and there would definitely not be any matching or in-kind funds.
Thank you very much.
Any other questions? Thanks for being here today. Sherry Gall?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Sherry Golan. I'm representing KidPAC today in support of House Bill 384. I seem to have lost my date here from this morning's CNRA presentation in the Senate. But indeed, rather than expanding this daycare assistance program, there is a very real possibility of seeing it shrink by, the proposal is $884,000. And as the commissioner pointed out when he discussed this proposal to cut the program, what that would amount to is more single parents on welfare. So PIPAC, of course, hopes that that reduction isn't necessary. But in light of that reduction, I would hope that this bill can continue forward with the fiscal note that it has and let it be considered by the Finance Committee with the whole child care program in mind, because there are big changes in store. The program that we're dealing with, the daycare assistance program and the administrative costs, one of the things that's been wrong with it is that the amount fluctuates from the administrator's point of view, is that without this change in language in the statute, they receive an amount that's based on the amount of daycare assistance that's given out every month. So every month it's a different amount, and the administrators never know from month to month how many people they can afford to have on staff. And so it makes for a very unstable situation, and therefore they tend to be very conservative, have fewer people on staff, and therefore fewer people can be interviewed for daycare assistance. And so sometimes there is money available, but because there are fewer people to interview those folks, the money can't be given out, the subsidies can't be given out, and then those people don't receive daycare assistance and possibly can't get out to work or training. So KIDPAC very much supports this bill for both parts of it, the part where it will hopefully cover a little bit more of the actual expenses, because 10% does not really come close to covering the direct expenses associated with administering the program, and the process change that is apparent in the repealing and reenacting of the language. So I hope you can look favorably on this bill and let the Finance Committee deal with the fiscal impact.
Okay, thank you. Any questions, comments? Okay, thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on this bill, 384, that hasn't signed up? And any other comments or questions on the bill by committee? Representative Foster?
With your pleasure, I'd like to move this bill out of this committee with individual recommendations.
Is there any objection? Hearing none, individual recommendations, and move out. Okay, the next item is House Bill 526. Representative Lincoln? Nancy, can you get Representative Lincoln? We'll spend these for a while. Come back to order. Representative Lincoln?
Are they on? Okay.
No, we're not. We're all set.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, you have in your packet, I believe, the summary statement for HB 526, so I won't go into that. But I would like to point out some of the areas that how 526 works and some of the things that it doesn't do. To begin with, the concerns that have been expressed by communities in the district is that there are no participation in the construction of state agency projects that are built for their communities. The only relationship that exists is between the state agency and the contractor oftentimes. These are mainly projects administered by DOT, not putting the agency at fault, but just that we need to put together more of a state-community partnership. The communities would like to participate in the administration of these state agency projects, just like as schools and transportation projects. The local governments would like to have a say in how contractors do business in their communities, and in some cases would like to be the contracting agencies on projects like school construction. The local governments and community residents have also expressed concern over the performance of some contractors in their villages. There have been dissatisfaction with the final product in too many cases. Dissatisfaction with the way the contractor conducted business while in the community, either environmentally, community relations, non-communication with local residents, local governments about the project. There is also no accountability presently between the contractor and the local community. If a contractor does not perform under the terms of the contract, or if a contractor has created damage to the environment or behavior in an irresponsible manner in the community, there is nothing right now to prevent that contractor from going into another community and performing in the same poor manner. The state doesn't have the resources to always monitor the work, especially in terms of the community's concerns and desires. The small construction projects, businesses, particularly in rural areas, would like a better opportunity to be able to contract on these projects. If they are capable of doing this, we should be looking at ways to provide opportunities for employment in these communities. We realize that there are concerns, and I believe the Department of Labor, I believe it is here, that there are concerns about a section of the bill that we're certainly willing to work with to resolve. In talking to state agencies, we have heard support expressed for the intent of the bill, more local control and participation in the construction of community facilities. If we can start with an agreement on the common goal of the legislation, we can certainly work out the details. I will make myself and staff available to work with the concerned agencies, administration, commerce and economic development, DOT, to address these concerns that's in the bill. Certainly in the situation that we're in right now with the declining revenue, we can't afford to waste our financial resources. We need to look at creative ways to make sure our money is spent wisely and not wasted. Public facilities constructed by the state have a better chance of working if there is a local involvement in the administration of these projects, whether they are administered through a joint participation or individually. We also cannot afford to keep awarding contracts to contractors who have done a poor job on facilities within our smaller communities. The bill helps prevent that. Local control is a priority with local governments across the state. Provisions of this bill support more local control over the construction of a large public facility in our communities. This is not just limited to boroughs and incorporated communities. It is only fair to extend that opportunity for participation in our unincorporated communities. What the bill does is it gives the unincorporated villages the same opportunity to participate in the contract administration that is already enjoyed by municipal governments through the state AS 3515080. It also allows the urban and rural communities the opportunity to participate in capital projects process as an equal partner with the state agencies and contractors through licensing process. It would give both urban and rural Alaskans a better chance to participate directly in capital projects by giving them the opportunity to form local citizens' commissions, which would monitor contracts in progress and evaluate contractor performance. Under present law, the public's only recourse for redress of grievance against contractors is through lawsuits. Regulation of an industry by lawsuit is not good business. The bill also gives local government the option to form local inspection commissions to protect state and local interests as stated by existing laws, regulations, and terms of the contract. It relieves the small communities under 2,000 residents from the competitive bid process on small projects under $100,000, thereby creating opportunities for businesses in the bush. What it doesn't do, Mr. Chair, very briefly, is House Bill 526 does not mandate the formation of local inspection and evaluation commissions. It gives the local governing bodies the option to form the local inspection and evaluation commissions if they feel it is useful to do so. House Bill 526 also does not leave contractors at the mercy of recommendations by local commissions. The contractor may appeal the local evaluation to the Commissioner of DCNED. If the commissioner determines that a preponderance of evidence does not support the allegations of misconduct, then that person may renew the registration. Contractors who perform in good faith are unlikely to ever have a problem getting re-registered. It will not perpetuate a system that allows contractors who don't fulfill contract terms to continue to work in Alaska. Local contractors who are incompetent and no longer enjoy the protection of an indifferent bureaucracy and will be held accountable. And lastly, it does not create more bureaucracy. Unpaid local commissions will be based on the model of borough service area commissions, a concept that has served the public well. In the long run, it should save contractors from the proliferation of legislation, boards, commissions, and police powers that have grown up in other states to regulate their activities. I point out to you, Mr. Chairman, that the letter from the city of Galena, where they have experienced the problems that I just spoke of with not having the ability to monitor what happens out there in with contracts. And I also have the Fairbanks paper dated March 12th, where an individual was found guilty by trial of doing work as a contractor without being registered. The fine was $750 with $500 suspended. So in actuality, the individual was fined $250 for doing contract work without registration. And what this bill does is it allows time and time and time again, we see out in the areas that are oftentimes not gotten to by roads, is we see contractors out there that are doing inferior work, that are doing work with seconds on lumber, that are not putting the electrical work in, that are hiding some of their work behind the walls, that the community knows what's happening, but since they are not involved in this process, they don't have any say in it. And this allows then those communities to be able to monitor the contractor and also to participate in it, because they're the ones that are going to have to live with that project when it's over. And I think that the idea of an ownership feeling that they were a part of that will certainly help in the projects out in especially rural Alaska. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'll be happy to answer any questions. You do have a fiscal note there. It's strange. This is almost like buying something for $1.99 instead of $9.99. This has a fiscal note of 99.9. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad to see it's two figures, but
at least they kept it under 100 anyway.
That's right.
Any questions of the sponsor? Representative Phillips.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Lincoln, I was concerned just going through it the first time as far as the definition of village, and I see in section 2 that you have identified what that, because I was concerned about the definition of incorporated versus unincorporated mm-hmm. villages. Will this then become a part of the definition of municipalities in community and regional affairs as it applies to all other areas of municipal, dealing with municipal government? Will this definition be accepted with the definition of municipality or municipal government?
I don't know, Mr. Chairman, if anybody is here from community and regional affairs on that, and I can't really answer your question.
I'll save that for when we get community and regional affairs.
However, I just might say that I certainly with this bill did not intend to have a separate definition.
Okay. Then going through your analysis of the bill itself, it says the bill gives local government the option to form local inspection commissions. Don't local governments already have that? I know we have that on the Kenai Peninsula.
No, we do not.
We had, when I was on our borough assembly, we did have an inspection team on several projects on the Kenai Peninsula.
Well, probably under the Kenai Borough Assembly.
Right.
Because it's in the incorporated, the incorporated.
That's right. All right, and then I find a lot of valid validity to this bill, with the exception of one issue. And you, if the analysis that says it relieves small communities under 2,000 residents from the competitive bid process on small projects under 100,000.
Mm-hmm.
My objection is I'd like to see that issue apply to all municipalities. It's just as important that the municipalities on the Kenai Peninsula, regardless of what their population is, don't have to put up with the BS that's associated with contracts as it is anywhere in Alaska. So my recommendation is that we amend it. If you've got a statewide contract anywhere that's under 100,000, let it be up to local option to handle it. And I would like to take out that, I would just like to see it amended to take out the population requirement.
Any other questions or comments? Okay, I'd like to hear from agencies. Lauren Rasmussen from DogPup. I know you're here to answer any questions. Did you have any comments you wanted to offer? Or,
just generally, joints.
Yeah, could you come forward and state your name for the record?
For the record, my name is Lauren Rasmussen. I'm the chief of our design and construction standards. I should say that on a general proposition, DOT is, of course, very supportive in trying to transfer responsibility for local projects to local agencies, and for local entities. We would like to concentrate on those projects that have a statewide significant and regional significance as opposed to a community one. I think the bill has some technical problems that we would be willing to work with the sponsor to alleviate those. Such things as making sure that there's an entity that we can transfer them to, and that there's some determination that they're capable of doing those kinds of projects. Those are the kinds of things that we would be interested in working with the sponsor to make sure that those technical pieces are put together. And whether we're talking about capital projects and making sure that we understand the difference between that and, say, operating maintenance and those kinds of things. So there's several little areas that we would like to make sure that we understand what they want and need. I also noticed that it really deals with AS 35, which is our public works section. And if it's going to be encompassing, we really should do AS 19, which is our highway program too, so our roads program. So that we address some of those technical pieces. But we're sure willing to work with a sponsor to try to get something that will be workable.
Great. Thank you very much. Questions? Dugan Petty, administration. Did you have comments, or were you just here to answer?
Just here to answer questions about the technical implications as they relate to 3630, the procurement statute.
Okay.
We pre-sponsor staff on a few of the technical concerns. They're willing to work with the staff. I can go into those if you care to.
I don't think it's necessary. Well, I'm going to put the bill into subcommittee, and at the request of the sponsor to work out some of these technical things, and then we'll get some of these things ironed out. Perhaps Representative Phillips' concern also, and we'll get it scheduled back up just as soon as we can work out some of those things. So, you know, I don't think we need to belabor a lot of those things. I just want to make sure you didn't have any additional comments. Okay, Jackie Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, committee, thank you for this opportunity. My name is Jacqueline L. Johnson. I'm the Executive Director of Tlingit and Haida Regional Housing Authority. I'm also the President of the Association of Alaska Housing Authorities. Although I don't really know the full implications of this bill at this time, I am in support of the concept of the bill. Any measures that allow locals to have more control over contract administration and the contractor performance only enhances contract compliance by the communities themselves. This bill is an opportunity for unincorporated villages to strengthen themselves and to participate in contract administration that affects their communities. It also extends opportunities for the much-needed economic rural development. As housing authorities in the state, serving many smaller villages, we encourage the participation of these governments, hoping their development will encourage the development of a more skilled labor force and the strengthening of code compliances, which as housing authorities, we are deeply in need of. Thank you.
Okay. Questions? Thank you very much. Ann Boudreau, occupational licensing. Good afternoon, Ann.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Basically, I'm in support of the concept of the bill. Mine is probably ranges a little different than just rural input and so forth. It goes to why should one branch of the government give contracts and help somebody and also continue the privilege of licensure, because it's not a right, it is a privilege, when somebody is not doing right by living up to a contract, or in the worst case scenario, actually defrauding another government entity, whether that was rural or urban. That seems like manipulating the system more than what I would like to see. I believe that we do need to maybe look at the contractor statutes as written, because while this bill would give us some authority, there are some conflicts with the Administrative Procedure Code and how you can go about suspending, and if those are in conflict, the APA may take place, but I think those are something that we can work with the sponsor on in committee. I'm glad to see that they're going to have a mechanism to have inspection by some group in the village, because we do have some licensing under contractors for mechanical and electrical administrators, which are supposed to be like inspectors, although I think there's a flaw in that they are employees of the contractor performing the job. But villages sought and got an exemption for having to have those inspections done by those two types of administrators. And so they're even more subject to having shoddy work done than something that was done in the urban. And I believe that was to keep the cost down. So if they would have some kind of on-site inspection from the community, because the division is definitely not equipped to be sending people out, and neither is the Department of Labor, for those for job inspection while it's ongoing. And other than that, I think the problems are some fine-tuning that would need to be done to make sure that it's not in conflict with due process procedures and so forth that's dictated by the Administrative Code. But I think we will be able to work with the sponsor on that. And this might actually lead to a review of the contractor statutes, which I think is long overdue as well.
Very good. So you'll participate in that process then,
yes,
the subcommittee. Thank you. Anybody have any questions first? Okay.
Sir, I did think of one other thing. In regard to the fiscal note, we've been trying to reflect accurate costs so that we don't have somebody come in and find out that we need to go to the supplemental. Depending upon what we're able to do in subcommittee, I believe that there's a possibility of being able to get a revised schedule. If we could put a little bit more of the burden on the villages for the reporting, so that we don't have to spend so much time in trying to verify before we renew, I believe we would be able to cut a fair amount of money off of the fiscal note.
That'd be great. Thank you. Anyone else on this bill? Okay, I'd like to ask Representative Foster to chair a subcommittee with Representative Davis and Representative Gonzalez, and to work with the sponsor and the department agencies, and I'd like to also encourage Associated General Contractors and anyone else affected by this legislation to also participate and offer up some comments. And hopefully, I personally do appreciate the intent of this legislation. We need to modify a few things, that's great, and we'll get it stated back up as soon as we get this worked out.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
With that, I'll move on to 476, Hospital 476, municipal fiscal notes. Municipal fiscal notes, we have a CS before us now. And there was, as you recall, in the last hearing, we had concerns and some suggested amendments by DCRA and AML, and I don't see Scott here. Would you tell Scott Burgess, yeah, or her in this bill? I think you wanted to testify on it. I guess first of all, what took place is Representative Choquette, who's been working on this legislation since we introduced it at his request, worked with the different agencies and came up with this CS that's now before you. I know mine's highlighted as to what the actual changes were. I don't know if the staff highlighted anyone else's, but line four, starting with the word that is referred to at least two committees. You might want to highlight that. That was one change. Line six at the end, Nancy, I'm not sure exactly what this means. Deleted savings here.
It used to say that we, with the fiscal note, showed cost and savings.
Okay, and you
deleted
out.
Savings, so it only shows cost.
Okay, we're only talking about a cost to a municipality and not savings and so forth. I guess basically what we're trying to do is eliminate a lot of the things that they would have to do fiscal notes for that weren't going to have negative financial impact on communities, which will save the department some money and so forth. So, line seven, at the very end, words does not increase costs, continuing into line eight. Again, that was another suggested amendment by DCRA, I believe. At the end of line eight, the second, were part of the amendment. Line 10, after regional affairs, in cooperation with other affected state agencies, and then continuing on to line 11, it shall be delivered in accordance with D. I want to highlight that. That took place as an amendment. Page 2, line 1, in the middle of the line, you might highlight C1, 2, 6, and 7 through 9 of this section. And then also at the very end, line 5, section 2 is repealed 97. That gives a 5-year delayed sunset versus 3. And to my knowledge, that encompassed all of the concerns that people had. I know we're going to hear from DCRA and AML, but I'd like to perhaps put the CS before us. We can have the motion to do that. Any objection? Then the CS for 476 is before us. Josh, do you have any? Did I pretty much cover everything?
Yes, you did, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, DCRA, Sandra Wicks, department is in full support now.
Yeah, it looks fine to us. We're still interested in the letter of intent coming out of some committee to show that people are serious about funding.
Right.
And we will be able to, if this is adopted, we'll be able to reduce our fiscal funding.
Very good. And that you will submit a revised fiscal note to the next committee of referral to finance. Good. Very good. AML, Scott Burgess.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Scott Burgess with the Alaska Municipal League. I apologize for being out of town last week. Apologize for only being partly in town this week.
It is most appreciated, thank you.
I think that the CS goes a long way to do what I think is a very important piece of legislation, probably a foundation for what needs to happen in the future as we look at maybe perhaps decreasing oil revenues and trying to get a better sense of roles and responsibilities of the different government levels. I think that all the CS changes are good. There were a couple that we had suggested, and I understand that perhaps the drafters found some problem in terms of binding future legislators. Our comment was that perhaps some language that says if the fiscal note wasn't put on, in other words, you passed a bill without that knowledge, that the bill would have no effect. In other words, you passed a bill that you didn't know what the fiscal impact was, but they presumably had some problem with that in terms of binding future legislators. Yeah. I guess I can quibble over that, but I raised that as an issue, because it seems to me it's not a binding in the sense of, I think, what the Constitution intended. The only other thing was, and I think you've done a lot of that in this bill, is to focus in, and I use the word mandate because that's just the lexicon of the 80s and 90s. You know, here we're talking about costs. You can do it any way you want, and I think you've indicated that an appropriations bill you've taken out, if there's no cost, then won't deal with fiscal note in that sense. And we had tried to sort of narrow and focus even more. I mean, for example, if a federal government passes a law, which the state just
adopts as the implementing agency and doesn't increase that law, that's not the state's fault, and perhaps no fiscal note. I mean, that's to be addressed at Congress, not here. Then the other thing is, for example, in the governor's capital matching grant program, that's a bill that you don't need to take apart, you know, play the game if you don't want to. What we're trying to focus in on is the test for whether a mandate or a cost exists should be whether the municipality may elect not to comply without penalty. And that's what we're trying to get into. And that's not in there, but I understand that those issues were raised, and I think the bill does get at it, and I think that we ought to try it, and we'll take one step at it at a time.
Questions? Okay. Any questions? So AML has no major objection to moving this bill. I'd like to move along in the process. I think we're getting at getting at the municipal fiscal notes, something that was a very high priority, and maybe you could, in the next committee, share your concerns with the next committee also, and see what if maybe the attorneys might come up with some kind of language that you guys can work on that will work. I tend to agree with what the attorney said, at least right now. And I don't want to have something in there that's going to hold the bill up from accomplishing what we're doing here. So.
Right. And I, in reference to Sandra Wicks with DCRA, I think this issue is a big one. I mean, it's important. It's not just going to happen. I mean, there is going to have to be money tied to this thing, because it's not easy. We've got a very large state. We have a wide range of municipalities. But I think probably the area that we're most concerned with, or will be, given that we've got a state that's done a lot over the last few years, some refer to it as a socialistic state in the sense that the state does a lot, is what we're seeing is things being shifted from state doing it to local governments doing it. So there's a knowledge in terms of that cost. When you're dealing with something brand new that no one's ever seen before, that's a little harder to determine. But I think in cooperation with other affected state agencies, because DCRA isn't involved in, for example, land swaps in DNR or tied land permits or those kinds of things, or recording agencies, or whatever they're called, recorder's offices. Those have been proposed to be eliminated and turned back to local government. So, I mean, it's important that they have that cooperation. I'm glad to see that's back to the bill.
Okay. Thank you. Oh, excuse me, Scott. Representative Davis.
It's not for Scott.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Chairman. It seems to me that by putting in that language in cooperation with other affected state agencies, that you take care of one of my concerns, and that was the whole REAA thing, because presumably if there was a school district bill that affected all the school districts, that you would also want to know from DOE how that would affect REAAs, as well as you would get that information from the municipalities on their school district. So it does take care of my concern.
Good. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we pass out CS for House Bill number 476 with individual recommendations and at the attached fiscal note.
Okay. Any objection? Okay, none, so ordered. The next on our agenda is discussion about potential legislation that the committee may want to introduce. As you know, the personal deadline has passed, and all bills need to be introduced by committee at this point. And there are two bills I'd like to bring to your attention. The one I'd like to go to first is an act establishing the Alaska Community College System. Since John Pugh is here and Mr. Keto, I don't see anybody here on the other one. I can handle that one to get done with this one in time. So this one, I'd like to just bring it before us for discussion, and we can talk about the pros and cons of doing it. And if the committee wishes to have me introduce this as a committee bill, then we will ask the committee to go on record doing that, directing me to do that, as well as the next bill. So with that, perhaps, Sam, do you want to give us a little background on this particular piece of legislation and why we should consider it?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Sam Keto, and I'm a lobbyist representing the Alaska Community College Federation of Teachers. And I have to apologize that the request for you is a request of the committee, because we had been working on this early in the session, and we were unable to get all the information together in a timely fashion to meet the individual date for introduction. However, we have worked with Representative Gail Phillips to finalize a draft that is before you for consideration. During the time since this issue was last before the legislature, following in the newspapers and following the budgeting process and the concern throughout the state of Alaska on the delivery of educational services to areas other than the urban communities. But even in the urban communities, there is a growing concern that the mission for community colleges should be preserved. And it's our feeling that the introduction of this legislation would go far to refocusing the attention to the most important part of the educational system in the state of Alaska that reaches out and touches nearly every community in the state. And the legislation generally will follow what we had introduced in an earlier legislative session that talks about governance and transfer of property, and talks about most important, and that is the comprehensive mission of a community college, which some people have seen as an indication that we are not focusing on what we should when it comes to post-secondary education in the state of Alaska. And it's a request for introduction. It's not we're not asking for you to vote on the pros or cons of it, but we ask an opportunity to have it introduced and to have a hearing hearings on it during the legislative session for people to come forward and make comments on what their feelings are on the legislation.
Okay, thank you. Some questions for Representative Davis?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sam, I don't know if you know it or not, but I was a big opponent of the restructuring for this very reason, that I was concerned we were going to lose the mission of the community colleges, and indeed I agree with you, we are, I believe. And I have some serious concerns about the place for the small communities that I represent, the small areas of the state, as to how they're faring in this whole operation of the university system. I guess my question would be, and this is maybe a little premature because all you're asking us to do is introduce this, but just so I can understand why we would be doing that, my question is around, you know, the funding is obviously becoming more and more limited. How would you envision that these community colleges would be able to continue to operate under the funding situation we find ourselves in now, if split off from the university system, as it were?
Yes, sir. Through the chair. I think at a minimum, what we're proposing as is that in declining revenues, if their university is on declining revenues, that during the budgeting process, that if there is legislation to balance on how you deliver the services, I think that if we look into the urban communities, we can make a determination that the that at least 3/4 of the credit hours in the University of Alaska Anchorage are driven by the community college system in the first 2 years, and 1/4 of the credit hours are driven by the 4-year institution. But when you get that as a mix, then what we need to see is a priority in the system that makes a determination that the mission is still going to be focused on by the system. And even if there isn't an opportunity to totally separate it, I think that the dialogue that will come of this during the budgeting process is going to go far in making the administration of the community colleges and the University of Alaska focus on what problems are in the implementation of educational delivery systems.
That was one concern that I had also. Was how are our smaller, I mean, even, you know, the dialogue will be good to talk about even our smaller universities like University of Alaska Juneau. How is University of Alaska Juneau or the Sheldon Jackson campus going to fare if the chancellor of the whole university system has to make significant budget reductions? How are these smaller schools, even within the university system, going to fare, let alone the community colleges? I think that we should maybe create that dialogue and talk about those types of things as well. And certainly just by introducing this legislation, putting it on the table, most likely it's not going to be before our committee that we're going to have to decide, but it would be before committees that can deal with the appropriateness of whether or not to move the bill or whatever the thing is now as to whether or not to actually introduce it before the legislature is something to talk about. Representative Phillips?
I would like to be the one, since I was so intimately involved with this so many years ago, to request that the committee adopt it as a committee bill. But before I do that, I'd like to just make comment that we fought a noble battle 5 or 6 years ago to prevent the restructuring because there were many of us that could see what was happening to the revenues and what was happening to the university. And everything that, I always hate to say I told you so, but everything that we predicted at that time has come true and affected the quality of the university today. So I think this is a very timely move to make for us to be making again in the state of Alaska, and I would make the motion that we adopt this as a committee bill and start work on it.
Okay. Before we take any motions on the bill, I'm going to also hear from John Pugh from the university. But when it comes time, Representative Phillips, I will just join you for that motion.
Thank you.
I'm just here to listen.
Oh, okay. I see that you signed up and said that you wanted to.
I think I said no.
Oh, you did say no. I'm sorry. I was kind of looking forward to seeing and hearing what your comments are. Would you like to share with us anything you're doing?
I can share about UAS. I can't speak to the whole system, but
I guess maybe I would ask.
You might want to wait until later. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of hearings and stuff.
I guess I was just concerned with asking the obvious. I mean, is the university like going to totally opposed to even looking at this concept, or are you guys willing to work within the the committee structure to address it, the issue, and create and work with them to provide dialogue and so forth? I mean,
well, I can speak for UAS just in terms of that, but I couldn't speak for the whole system. So.
I like how you got it. Okay. I guess short of kicking and screaming and hollering, then I guess that's fine.
Yes. Yeah. Just one comment, Mr. Chairman. I think that the newspaper article that came out of the problems on the northern campus, the University of Alaska Fairbanks, that you could take that around to legislators that that were on the side of community colleges 5 or 6 years ago and say that this was my poor speech about what was going to be happening. So beginning of the dialogue is all we're requesting.
Any other comments, questions? Representative Phillips?
I so moved.
Okay, the motion is for the record to give committee approval to the introduction to have the chair introduce this legislation as by the CNRA committee by request. Any objection to the motion? Hearing none. And this one might be just a little bit out of I don't want to say context or anything, but it is a community and a regional affair that we need to probably take a look at, and that is an act relating to a moratorium on issuance of vessel licenses for vessels used in the charter service for recreational taking of fish and shellfish and providing for effective day. Most of you, and with permission of the committee, I'd just like to expand on it since it's my request that we look at this. We're dealing right now with the situation in Southeast Alaska with the King Salmon quota and so forth. I imagine you've been getting TOMs continuously in regards to House Bill 505, which Senator Elias, or which I introduced, and 397 in the Senate, which Senator Elias introduced, to give the Board of Fish tools to allocate and to separate user groups and so forth like that. And the reason, I mean, a lot of the charter boat people in the state were opposed to the legislation because they felt that we were trying to single them out and run them out of business and so forth. And we did try to assure them that certainly wasn't the case. What we were trying to do is clarify statutes to allow the Board of Fish to deal with an ever-escalating problem, which is the growth of the charter boat industry, which is taking away from the commercial trawlers and also seriously threatening the true sportsman's ability to be able to go out and catch a king salmon, take his family and go out on a weekend and catch a king salmon or whatever, and not have to worry about the charter boat industry getting so big that it uses up all the quota. The problem is we have a certain amount of king salmon that can be caught in Southeast Alaska because of the U.S.-Canada treaty. And so that's the reason for the controversy and so forth. This bill is an effort for me to reach out to those charter boat people who are feeling like they're disenfranchised and to bring them in and put a moratorium against a bunch of new people getting into the industry, to give us a couple years to take a look at possibly a limited entry program or work with the entry commission, work with the charter boat people to try to establish some form of protection for their industry, which most of them make a livelihood for. It. So it's like an effort to make everybody feel like they're getting their day in court or that they're participating in the process and being fairly heard and that their interests are being looked out for also. I don't feel I need to do this for a political reason. I feel I need to do this because it really is the right thing to do in order to protect that industry like we were trying to protect the trawlers and the sport fishermen. So it's like one component that's actually needed yet to solve the whole problem. So that's the reason I brought it to this committee to I know Representative Davis has had a very difficult time because both her and I have had many constituents on opposite sides of the fence and so forth, and I think she knows exactly what I'm getting to by trying to resolve the intensity, I guess, of the issue and provide for a level playing field. So, why is it appropriate to come before this committee? I can't come to you and say because this is the exact committee that would do it. It's kind of worked with you for 2 years and feel comfortable in bringing something to your attention that maybe you'd help me out with here. So I'm not going to try to BS you or anything like that. It might be considered not appropriate. Representative Davis.
I'd like to thank you. And, you know, I guess we've set up the committee process to use it any way we want to. And I know people have used it for weirder reasons, so I don't have a problem with it. I appreciate the spirit and the intent of behind introducing this. And I think that there may be some problems in some parts of the state who aren't reaching their peak, as it were, with the charter industry, like the area that we live in is right now, but we can work those things out if this bill really gets moving along. And I appreciate it.
Okay, and the other thing is I need to talk a little bit about what some of the problems might be. First of all, I've talked to lots of people from Representative Phillips' area on the Kenai. You know, there are a lot of them are concerned about separating out user groups and so forth. This might make them feel a little bit more comfortable that we're trying to protect them. This only actually deals with licensed charter boats, vessels, licenses themselves, not guided sport licenses. But this is an effort to slow down the tide, I guess, and maybe all the people that run charters for halibut and so forth out of Homer. This would affect them too because of vessel licenses. New people coming in, it would serve to protect all the people that are presently in the business now or in the process. I mean, you'll see in the bill that it talks about a number of ways that they can still be licensed if they've, if they have, let's see, substantial and continued effort towards the construction of a vessel, or a substantial or non-refundable payment towards purchase of a vessel for the use in there, the transfer of owner of vessel ownership didn't occur before this effective date. Those types of things, if they're in the process of becoming involved in the fishery, they would not, I mean, they would still get their license. We're not just automatically cutting it right off. But we need to get a handle on it. It's only a moratorium. It's not limited entry. It's not anything else other than give us a chance to evaluate this whole issue statewide and maybe make some recommendations. The one problem that was brought to our attention by our legal people is that there might be some question as to the constitutionality of this particular legislation in dealing with the open access clause of our Constitution. However, if we reference in there, which we need to, there'll be one change to this bill as far as it'll be drafted a little bit differently. And that is, we need to mention that the reason for doing the moratorium is to be able to investigate a limited entry program for charter vessels. That way, there has been cases upheld in by the court. And if you're doing it for a purpose, if you're just putting a moratorium on just to keep people out, then it's not constitutional. But if you're doing it for the purpose of giving the Limited Entry Commission an opportunity to look at what needs to be done and so forth, then it's a valid thing. So that would be the part that we would reference in there, that the reason for it being to look at a limited entry program. So I will provide a copy of that legal opinion to each of you, but that is a concern that we'll need to try to work with. Jennifer Phillips?
Another concern we probably should include in here is specific to the problems on the Kenai Peninsula, specific to the problems on the Kenai River, where the Kenai River Management Plan controls the Kenai River and has already enacted legislation, which is not in effect yet, to limit the number of charter vessels on the river itself. So we're going to need to tie in local option management plans with what the Alaska Commercial Fishing Entry Commission can do. And my only other thought is I have no problem with having this come out of our committee, but it probably needs to be reviewed in resources also.
Oh yeah, that's where it will be referred to.
Yeah.
Again, this one won't be referred to us either.
Yeah.
But I can explain why we introduced it. As far as your concern, Representative Phillips, about the management plan on the Kenai, that can be regulated by the Board of Fish. And if my other bill, House Bill 505, passes, or its companion bill passes, it would clearly give the Board of Fish the authority to regulate it. Right now, people on the Kenai, Kenai Professional Sportsman Association, a lot of those people have objected to the bills because they said that it would give the Board of Fish the right to go in and create a separate group and everything. But the AG's office is telling us that if we don't clarify the statute, the whole management plan of the Kenai River is in total jeopardy.
They still can't take away the Kenai River management area. But that's what I'm identifying is the area itself versus something that the Alaska Fisheries Commission, Entry Commission, would come in and try to manage over the Board of Fish organization or Board of Fish regulations.
No.
Just so we have clarification.
Okay. I understand what you're getting at, but the actual management area, that's all Board of Fish action.
Yeah.
The commercial entry only deals with licensing and changes. So. Anyway, I would like to, I don't know if you need more information, but I would like to introduce this and get it on the table see what happens in the committee process, at least make an attempt to address these issues that are important, regional important issues. Then
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we introduce this as a committee, as a CRA committee bill.
Okay. Is there any objection? Hearing none.
By request?
But,
do you want
by
request?
Well, no, not by request. Could be by request if you wish, but it's not necessary. Okay, if there's no objection, then we'll do that. Nancy, what's next? Do we have a meeting Wednesday?
No.
Or Thursday?
No.
Okay, we're off.
Yay.
The rest of the week.
Yay.
No, I think we're just...
We're going on a committee.
I think we've actually taken care of most of our bills.
So we're going on a committee trip.